Hello and welcome to The Music and the Movies, a program that looks at and listens to the sweet spot where music and movies intersect. In this hour, we ponder the special alchemy that happens when sound meets image, where music lovers and cinephiles come together. We explore a different theme in each episode, arranged around an idea or a person, and we delve into why some of our favorite movie moments are also musical ones. My name is Robert Horton. I'm a movie critic and historian and a member of the National Society of Film Critics. I'll play some music and talk about it in an attempt to get to the bottom of a lifelong fascination with why film is so especially intoxicating when music is involved. And at the end of each show, I'll round things off with the trailer, a particular cut that either didn't fit into the overall flow or has some special meaning to me or just so weird it deserves its own spot. So join us, won't you, for The Music and the Movies. Today's episode, Max Steiner. We delve into the career of one of the founding composers of Hollywood history. In fact, someone who could hold as strong a claim as anybody to the mantle of the man who invented movie music. Max Steiner was there at the beginning, and his story has many unlikely twists and turns. His first film score was in 1930, as the movies were only just starting to figure out how music could be appended to celluloid. And his last came in 1965, as the Hollywood he knew was about to undergo a complete personality change. Steiner's music was not of the shrinking violet variety, shall we say. He has sometimes been accused of overwhelming movies, a charge he denied. But I hope this will make him fun to listen to, because Maxie always really brought it. Never more so than in the biggest musical soundtrack of them all, his score to Gone with the Wind. We'll also listen to one of the most influential scores of movie history, which pertains to a certain giant ape. And we'll drop by a bar in Casablanca called Rick's Cafe, where the piano player keeps playing that song, and hear how Steiner coincided with Westerns and excelled at the so-called women's picture. And then finally, for the trailer at the end of the show, we will hear how he conquered the top 40 with an ode to teen love written at the age of 71. I've just read a biography titled Music by Max Steiner, published in 2020, written by Stephen C. Smith, from which I've drawn bits of biography for our show. It's a book well worth reading if you're into film music. Smith had access, I guess, to Steiner's scores on paper in his archive at UCLA, and passes along the often very amusing detailed comments that Steiner jotted down for his orchestrators while in the midst of some inevitably last-minute, all-night composing and recording session. He also describes the Middle European milieu in which Max Steiner was born in 1888 in Vienna. His grandfather had been a theatrical impresario who cultivated a partnership with the great Johann Strauss Jr. In fact, he debuted Die Fledermaus, among many other operettas, in his theater. Steiner's father was kind of a little Disney, operated an elaborate theme park in Vienna. Max Steiner himself came to America in his late 20s, and he was over 40 when he began composing in Hollywood. He'd been a conductor, musical director, and orchestrator, but except for a brief fling at creating music that could be performed for silent pictures, he didn't have a large profile as a composer, actually, but there he was, in the right place at the right time, as his work on Broadway caught the attention of a Hollywood that needed people who knew something about music. Specifically, RKO Pictures in 1930, where Steiner was thrown into the deep end and anointed a film composer. So we're going to, in our earliest track that we're going to listen to here, Steiner was sort of rising to the ambitions of a young producer at RKO, David O. Selznick, who had this instinct that extensive use of music as underscoring, even in talkies, could be a crucial emotional tool. So here's an excerpt from the 1932 Symphony of 6 Million, a story of a Jewish family in New York, largely forgotten today, but was an ambitious attempt to create a score that operates throughout the entirety of the film. I think you're going to hear the energy and inventiveness that Max Steiner had stored up inside him. Thank you. That is music from Symphony of 6 Million. Kind of a symphony of a city sort of feel to it there. Musically speaking, it was one of the most ambitious pictures of its moment, which was 1932. Steiner got to create a lot more music on an extremely short schedule, again, when he did a replacement score for The Most Dangerous Game. That is, somebody had already done the music, but it needed some goosing. Another 1932 release based on that famous short story by Richard Connell. You probably read this in high school like I did. This is that one about the big game hunter who has his own island and goes hunting for the most elusive quarry of them all. Yes, man himself. Lots of big music in this one, but let's play an example of something Steiner did with great precision throughout his career. Create individual leitmotifs for particular characters. In this case, the madman hunter, the Russian Count Zaroff, gets his own piano tune titled Russian Waltz. That's a quieter moment from an otherwise resounding score by Max Steiner for The Most Dangerous Game, heard there with the music reconstructed by John Morgan for a recording by the Moscow Symphony Orchestra. Steiner's work with this film's producer, Marion Cooper, led directly to Steiner going ape with his next big job, truly asserting his spot as the early king of movie music, as Cooper mounted his production of King Kong. The landmark hit from 1933 that is remembered for its imagination, its special effects, and its gonzo musical score. Steiner backs away from absolutely nothing in this one, as Stephen C. Smith records in his Steiner bio. At one point, the composer wrote in his orchestration notes, "Furioso, the orchestra should go nuts here," all in capital letters. We're going to play a cue from King Kong, and you can decide when the orchestra goes nuts. It's called Aboriginal Sacrificial Dance. Yes, this could only be Max Steiner and King Kong. Thank you. music from King Kong, the classic monster movie by Max Steiner in a digital recording by the Moscow Symphony Orchestra. The score remains a landmark in Hollywood lore. The composer Jerry Goldsmith, speaking in the 1990s, said, "The techniques developed by Steiner for Kong are basically the same techniques we use today. I'm doing what I'm doing because of it." The movie made a permanent impression on the 12-year-old future author Ray Bradbury, who said that the Kong score made me realize there was a vast, puzzling, and unknown art form out there in the world inside the silver screen that was capable of summoning up images within the instant of hearing. A week, a month, or a year later, it was a beginning for me and thousands like me, an invitation to listen as well as to look. Well, that gets right to the heart of this show, which is called The Music and the Movies. I'm the host, Robert Horton, looking at the career of one of Hollywood's founding film composers, Max Steiner. Needless to say, after King Kong, Steiner was very busy in the 1930s, first at RKO, where he was involved, not in the songwriting, but in the incidental music for Astaire and Rogers pictures, as well as his first Oscar for The Informer, a John Ford film from 1935. He also freelanced a bit when Selznick went solo, and finally settled into a long run with Warner Brothers. Now, before we consider the very big project that Selznick had cooking, let's ponder the way certain composers can be identified with certain actors. Steiner and Bette Davis were both under contract to Warner Brothers, and this meant that their paths crossed a number of times, giving Steiner a chance to write music very different from some of the big action beats that we just heard. We're going to begin with music from the enormously popular 1942 melodrama Now Voyager. I think this should be familiar to anyone who's a fan of Bette Davis or this era. One of Steiner's most recognizable melodies here, and you might even think of the lines, "Don't let's ask for the moon, we have the stars." And right off the top here, we're going to hear the Warner Brothers logo flourish, you know, the one that played before most of their films of this period, which was composed by, you guessed it, Max Steiner. Music by Max Steiner, in tune with Bette Davis, from Now Voyager. The relationship between actor and composer could be symbiotic, as maybe the following anecdote will suggest. While shooting Dark Victory, the 1939 film, in which Davis plays a socialite who has a fatal brain tumor, there's a scene where her character, now going blind, must bravely make her way up a staircase. And the legend has it that Davis was walking up the stairs when she suddenly halted the scene, went down to the director and asked him whether Max Steiner was composing the music for the movie. He said he didn't know, but why would she ask such a question? And she supposedly said, well, either I'm going to climb those stairs or Max Steiner is going to climb those stairs, but I'll be goddamned if Max Steiner and I are going to climb those stairs together. Now, that story is telling, not just because it showed that actors, you know, had an awareness of the power of music in film, but that a canny actor might even gauge her performance according to whether a particular high-powered composer was going to be doing the score. The relationship could be even more intimate, actually. At times, Steiner, he'd be there watching footage from a film as he prepared his music, and he would peg certain musical cues to the pitch of Betty Davis's voice. He'd go a little bit higher, a little bit lower, so that he wasn't in contrast with it. So, with that in mind, let's listen to two more titles that link Max Steiner with this one powerful actress. First is a waltz from Jezebel, 1938 movie of the antebellum South. Movie was thought of as kind of a warm-up for Gone with the Wind, you know, with Davis staking her claim to Scarlett O'Hara, a role she did not get. And then we're going to hear the opening title music from The Letter, one of my favorite Davis performances, a film where she begins the movie shooting her lover to death on a Southeast Asian rubber plantation, then spending the rest of the movie trying to brazen it out. An odd little Max Steiner score with some exotica involved. Thank you. Music composed by Max Steiner for movies starring Bette Davis. You just heard the opening title music from The Letter there, where you maybe heard some that kind of Hollywood faux exotica coming in there at the end for a melodrama set in Malaysia. And before that was a waltz from Jezebel. All three of those Bette Davis cues there were conducted by Charles Gerhardt with the National Philharmonic Orchestra. Okay, it's time for Max Steiner's Pièce de Résistance, the biggest movie of its era, and one of the most recognizable movie themes of them all. Gone with the Wind was a superproduction based on Margaret Mitchell's best-selling novel, the pet project of the producer David O. Selznick, as we mentioned, had worked with Max Steiner before, and who sometimes butted heads with his composer. Selznick was big on using pre-existing melodies that the audience might recognize, something that Steiner wanted to avoid wherever he could in lieu of his own original work. In this case, though, there was so much music to make and so many Civil War-era melodies to exploit that Steiner had to go along with the idea. Plus, Selznick dithered almost as much in his choice of composer as he did with picking Vivian Leigh as the leading lady of the film, nearly firing Steiner at various times during the process. Now, Gone with the Wind sold as many tickets as any movie ever made, and it has certainly been beloved over the years, even though, let's face it, it's basically a soap opera served up with Technicolor sauce. As the years go by, it gets harder to endure its grossly sentimentalized and whitewashed version of the slaveholding South. But, and this is where we return to something I often talk about in this show, the madness of loving movies and their music. It's still possible to hear Steiner's music and maybe just swoon a little. That's why critical thinking comes in handy. You know, we can hold more than one thought in our head at the same time. Here's the music known as Tara's Theme. some of the most recognizable music in film history. Dating from 1939, that's Tara's theme from Gone with the Wind, composed by Max Steiner. It's been recorded many times, of course. We heard a performance there by the Boston Pops, conducted by John Williams. Although Steiner won 3 Oscars during his career, that was not one of them. He was nominated for the movie, but didn't win. The score is vintage Steiner, not just in its largeness, but in the way Steiner imported ideas from opera, creating a specific musical leitmotif for each of the main characters, for instance. And in his tendency to Mickey Mouse certain musical cues, too, a term that refers to composers hitting a visual idea with an exact musical counterpart, you know, like creating big beats to match a character's heavy footsteps. By the way, as monumental as Steiner's music was on that nearly 4-hour film, consider the life of a top-flight Hollywood composer, because Steiner worked on at least 9 other movies that year, and a couple of others, too, unofficially. That idea that a composer will, you know, sometimes be forced to use pre-existing music by the dictates of the producer or director, that would come into play on one of the most famous titles in Steiner's filmography. The film is Casablanca from 1942. And as soon as I say that, you are likely hearing a melody in your head, a little number called As Time Goes By, sung at the piano by Dooley Wilson, the actor playing Sam, as in Play It Sam. The timeless request from Humphrey Bogart in response to the unlikely event that of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she, that's Ingrid Bergman, had to walk into Rick's Cafe American. That song was written in 1931 by Herman Hupfeld, and although it's a standard today, it wasn't especially noted at the time. But the producer, Hal B. Wallace, insisted it be part of the movie as it had been part of the stage play that had been adapted, which was called Everybody Comes to Rick's. Isn't it amazing how many twists and turns there are to something becoming a classic? Steiner was assigned Casablanca, and guess what? He hated As Time Goes By. But it was too late. The movie was shot, and the song was in it, and it was Steiner's job to weave the melody into his incidental music, which he absolutely did. Let's hear a bit of the kind of melding and welding a film composer must do in this cue from Casablanca called Paris Medley. We begin with As Time Goes By, include a bit of the Marseillaise, which plays during an emotional moment elsewhere in the film. We also get a section of the great pop song Perfidia, which is playing in Paris when Bogart and Bergman are there. And of course, we get some of Max Steiner's original work. Here then, music from Casablanca. Thank you. That's the Paris Medley from the original soundtrack album of Casablanca, an example of a film composer incorporating pre-existing music, three different pieces in that case, and merging it with his own original work. We'll always have Paris, partly because of Max Steiner. You're listening to The Music and the Movies. I'm Robert Horton, and when I thought about doing a show on Max Steiner, a lot of movies came to mind, but here's one I don't think I would have thought of if it hadn't been for reading this biography of Steiner by Stephen C. Smith, which I mentioned before. Smith makes a good case for the 1944 film The Adventures of Mark Twain, a biopic of the author. I haven't seen this since grade school. I have a recollection of watching it in the church basement one afternoon, one of those attempts by American schooling to absolutely ruin any interest a kid might develop in Mark Twain. It took me years to come back to Twain and realize what a glorious, hilarious, subversive writer he is. Steiner's music for the film is a wonderful exercise in various types of Americana, including a long section depicting Twain's youthful experiences working on a riverboat. You'll hear some of that section in this cue called Riverboat in Fog, which uses a repeated four-note phrase that might just remind you of a paddleboat rolling on a river. Some wonderful, very American-sounding music there from The Adventures of Mark Twain, composed by Max Steiner, performed by the Moscow Symphony Orchestra in an album that recreates the score. I wonder whether this isn't an example of a foreign-born artist embracing Americana with a kind of warmth that native-born Americans sometimes lack. Well, I'd like to showcase the versatility of Steiner now with a series of different modes and genres. We've seen that Steiner is good at adventure music and big sweeping orchestral romance. Here are two examples of Steiner in a crisp, strutting military mode. First, we'll hear a cue from the 1936 film The Charge of the Light Brigade. This is called Forward, the Light Brigade. That's an Errol Flynn picture that alters British military history quite a bit. And then the Caine Mutiny March from the 1953 film The Caine Mutiny, which brings maybe a touch of John Philip Sousa to its story about the Navy in World War II.
Thank you.
two musical cues there composed by Max Steiner in a martial mode. We just heard The March from the Caine Mutiny, a movie I watched with my dad quite a lot on TV. That's the movie with Humphrey Bogart as the ship's captain who worries about who stole the strawberries. And before that, a theme from The Charge of the Light Brigade, another sprightly military piece of music. One of the first Max Steiner scores I think of, which happens to be from one of my favorite movies, is his energetic score for John Huston's great 1948 film, The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, a film in which Bogart and two well-worn prospectors, Walter Huston and Tim Holt, go searching for gold in Mexico. Music is very large here and quite varied, as you'll hear in these two cuts. The main title's music, where you'll hear the rousing sounds of adventure and also the dangerous shimmer of gold fever, and then an ending cue called Texas Memories Finale. Music by Max Steiner for The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, performed by the Moscow Symphony Orchestra, conducted by William T. Stromberg, who has done a series of recreated scores for disc. That's one of the best films Steiner was associated with, although I can never quite forget the critic Pauline Kael's stray comment when she was describing who should get the credit for the film, and she wrote that Max Steiner gets the blame for the music. And it is true that on some of his films, a little bit of Max goes a long way. This is The Music in the Movies with your host, Robert Horton, talking about movie music by Max Steiner and dipping now into Steiner's excursions into the Western with another of the best films he was associated with, John Ford's 1956 film, The Searchers, reuniting Steiner with the director of The Informer. Here again, Steiner needed to incorporate not only the pre-existing folk songs that Ford loved so much, but also a new title song written by Stan Jones, and this Steiner did very neatly throughout the score. We'll hear a cue that's made up of his own original work titled Indian Idol, which taps into the more lyrical side of the music. Music from the original soundtrack of The Searchers by Max Steiner. And we've arrived at the trailer, which provides us with a rounding off point today. The late 1950s, as Max Steiner is no longer employed by Warner Brothers. That was his last studio contract. And he's 71 years old, freelancing, overspending, as was his usual habit in life. He's on his fourth marriage and probably wondering whether he'd outstayed his welcome in a changing Hollywood. At that moment, in 1959, Steiner concocted a main title theme for a soap opera-ish melodrama, music that was picked up for recording by the bandleader Percy Faith, and a melody that went to the top 40 charts and became the number one song for 9 consecutive weeks. No song had ever done that before, giving Steiner financial security in the form of steady royalties that he'd been craving for years. Oh, maybe it seems a little silly now, but the theme from A Summer Place made Max Steiner relevant again. Don't You Dare Call It Easy Listening, the number one hit theme from A Summer Place, composed by Max Steiner, performed by Percy Faith and his orchestra. Max Steiner speaking to the youth of 1959. Steiner had to write something about young love, and that theme there is unquestionably simplified from the kind of music he usually composed, which I suppose was an irony that he perhaps appreciated. That career-capping success came almost 30 years after Steiner had arrived in Hollywood and been at the center of the invention of what film music was. And the late arrival of a bona fide hit single set him up comfortably for retirement, which came about 6 years later. That's our look at Max Steiner. Do check out Stephen Smith's biography if you want to know more. Our show is necessarily abbreviated because in a career that topped over 250 movies, you've got to be brutally selective. Imagine how many he would have finished if he'd gotten to Hollywood before the age of 40. We'll go out with more music from one of my favorites, The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Max Steiner said, "Good film music is written for a specific purpose, and if the film composer refuses to recognize the dictates of the picture, he may write a great symphony, but it will serve the film badly. My theory is that music should be felt rather than heard." I'm Robert Horton. I hope you've felt this episode, and I thank you for listening to The Music and the Movies.